Welcome back to the Stanford Healthcare AI Podcast. We're so thrilled to have Sandeep Dadlani, the CEO of Optum Insight, who really needs no introduction, who's been leading, talking a lot about what they're doing in AI kind of across the country for healthcare. So, Sandeep, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Justin, Matt. It's so cool to hang with the cool kids finally. So thank you.
That is very generous and untrue, given us nerds. But you were just starting to say something fun you were doing with AI on Father's Day. So
So on Father's Day,
elaborate more.
on Father's Day, my daughters, 23 and 19, have a tradition that I buy them gifts. Figure that. Anyway, so we decide we haven't bought anything yet, so we go to the mall. Like, who goes to the mall nowadays? But anyway, we go to the mall, and there's really nothing there. It's very few SKUs. There's very few depth of variety, and as you can imagine, not been in the mall for a long time. But they find some things which are interesting. But of course, it's not in the right size, it's not in the right color, it's not in the right fit. And what amazes me right now is you take a picture, I just uploaded to Gemini at that point, and then Gemini just figured out exactly the color, size, fit, and in stock availability. It did the work for us. And where it was available online, with which brand. And we had it set up that it ordered it. I've been in retail consumer most of my life, and I was just amazed at how much work it did for me and helped save Father's Day. So that is a recent instance which I really enjoyed. So, does that make sense?
Absolutely. And it's a perfect example also, which, one of the things Matt and I have done continuing on this podcast is just try to keep up what's happening, how is usage changing. And what you just mentioned, right, this how much work it did for me. I think this is actually one of the most fascinating things that's come up in the last week. And so actually there is a new paper, OpenAI released some of their internal data on how the work has changed. Because most of the world, right, OpenAI talks about 1 billion users, using ChatGPT, thinks about this as a Google replacement. Give me back my information. And what has changed that they showed, and this was their own internal data, is how not just engineering and coding replacement has worked, but across finance, recruiting, and legal, agents are now doing the work and just pulling that so much farther, like you mentioned in that shopping example. And I was just with a health system board last week. This is something, right, that we're not yet ready for in healthcare. We've done, question answering, a little bit of turns, but really doing the work is somewhere that it's hard. The whole world is starting to comprehend what this looks like, and it'll start in consumer and shopping examples. But this is where it's starting to change.
I mean, my point though, like I would say, like your example is great because it does start to, and this paper teases that out a bit because you're really now talking about like, again, not just a Q&A, which is, quick, short, transactional, which I would still argue is significantly helpful. But now we're talking about longer time horizon chains of tasks together. And in this paper, they even had, I think it was like 25% of them, like the tasks that the agents were doing for OpenAI use cases, again, not in engineering, were over 8 hours, or at least that was the estimate of the human that was saying, how long would this really take you to do? About 8 hours. I mean, I don't know how long it would have taken you to do all the sourcing to find the right. I mean, it's an insane amount of work, even if you're super facile with, search tools or whatever. But again, this is kind of like that overhang that we always are bringing up, which is like, again, we used to say with GPT-4o, if you paused it there's still plenty of things that it can actually operationalize and make my life better. But we're so far, like I'm running out of, I don't even know if I have an 8 hour task, an 8 hour continuous task to give an agent right now. I would struggle to come up with one. And that's the challenge I think we're posing to health systems and enterprises is like, we're gonna have to like almost break the bone to reform it. Because our systems just aren't built on sending a bunch of folks out to do 8 hour tasks and then returning. It's much more iterative than that. How do we break up the work or silo up the work so we can actually take advantage of the full capabilities of where the frontier is? I actually don't have a great answer right now.
No, and look, I mean, We've grappled with this inside United Health Group. Now, this is I'd say for large enterprises, a reasonably sophisticated shop. You've got about 22,000 engineers who can play around with LLMs and agents and, of course, do the job. But when it comes to long-form agentic work, I don't think we are there in terms of the governance, the guardrails, the security, and frankly, most importantly, the imagination. So I was just reviewing one of our businesses last week where, of course, they were showing off the latest AI stories, and everything was an agent. Even an API was called an agent because it's so cool to call everything an agent. And oh, if you create a super API, it became a super agent. And it was all wrong. I mean, this is the eagerness of people to impress and show agent. An agent needs to have, as the name indicates, agency to reason, to decide, to act. And then right now I see agents in the enterprise in silos where we are comfortable, where there's domain context, sort of integrity, secularity. Except that we won't reimagine healthcare if we just have eight agents in silos in an end-to-end process. So the opportunity is there. And it's apparent to us. And we're building the guardrails, the governance, the gateways to do that. Ironically, I think the rest of healthcare, I feel this represents the opportunity of a lifetime because there's so much that's possible now. And Justin, you're probably deep into health systems as well. You see this all the time, right? The opportunity is right there in front of us.
Yes. And I think you mentioned a few things that are fascinating, which is the siloed versus not siloed aspect to go solve a problem. I think the knee-jerk reaction is to go after the silo. Hey, an
Right.
agent, a task, an automation can fix this one thing in this one task. But we haven't done the work to reimagine, like, why do we do this task? This is actually one task in a much, much larger end-to-end flow to whether that's getting through a system to get paid, getting a patient to the right spot. And there's kind of laser focus right in front of kind of the work at hand. And the reimagination to say, what is this workflow? How do we do it? And how do we reimagine it given the new state of technologies is what is most impactful and I think most exciting, but also hardest to do. And I think the an interesting conversation I have with health systems, there's a recent conference where, people are talking about, hey, we know we're just going to make the investment. We don't exactly know where it's going to go, but we're going to kind of hope for the best. We're going to raft kind of a few point solutions. And it makes sense because it's hard to rethink through the many people involved in a certain task. And then there's this like incrementalism, which we talk a lot about, where just one thing after another, but they don't really add up. Some CFOs will talk about we see AI everywhere, but the bottom line, right? That's a
That's
refrain I've
right.
heard
That's
from a
right.
few times in health systems. And it's because we're not asking the hardest questions for what is the metric? Do we know it to begin with? And then how do we work to change it at scale? And that's kind of the thing I face over and over again. And this is a people challenge, candidly, more than it is a technical challenge today. And this is what's coming for healthcare, right? The tools are getting better and better.
But on that point, though, like when I hear agent and I put my CFO enterprise hat on, I'm thinking, oh, this is going to be expensive, right? Because, like, to me, I know you talked about you have to have agency, but agency to me means like blowing through tokens, going off and doing something, and we're not really even sure the efficiency of that token use for a given. So, like, there's that part of it. And on the other side, when you talk about silos and you talk about enterprise level engagements, now we're having real conversations about, hold on a second, I need to have more agency as an enterprise over both my spend, which we can sort of get into, and that's top of mind, I think. But then the other part is of the model. Like, I'm starting to feel like there's a backlash right now against some of the frontier labs in the use of locking in with one model and being beholden. If I've restructured my entire enterprise or workflows or systems around one provider or one API, now and then I see a GLM 5.2, or I see so and so, or let's say that there's an issue with the model's, security risk, and that gets pulled from me. Like, that is really concerning, because now I'm really worried about cost, and now I'm also worried about the not being able to keep my finger on the pulse of the race and the geopolitical and all the things. It's starting to get very complicated. But underneath all that, 100% agree. I think across the board, everyone would say this is transformative for my business, for my patients, for my health system, without question. How do I actually put myself in a position to take advantage of it without losing or falling behind or getting stuck or locked in? That is not, to me, solved at all right now.
Oh, I feel I'm like one weekend Twitter read away from again feeling obsolescent, completely irrelevant. What we've done so far, which I think you'll find fascinating, is I think if my first 3 years as CTO UAG, we just went, absolutely berserk with embedding these AI use cases in workflows. Prompt engineering was a thing. Generative AI and LLMs were a thing. The only thing I feel we got lucky on is we created this thing called a harness, United AI Studio. And now this year, I think there are people questioning, saying, why have you created this studio? This year, I feel a little more vindicated. I'm sure next year I'll feel embarrassed about something, but this year I feel vindicated. Okay, it has 117 LLM models, and about 20 of them are internal, open weight SLM models that we built for purpose. Others are commercial. It has a token gateway, which we hurriedly put together as soon as we started seeing headlines of other companies being embarrassed by token costs. Now, please, I dread the headlines tomorrow if one of our guys just blew up the tokens. But right now, we consume between, depending on the day, 10 to 25 billion tokens a day, billion with a B. And my personal token limit is $1,000. So at 1,000, the CTO of the enterprise calls me and says, "Dude, you're done. You can't mess around because you're not really moving things to production. You're just messing around." But sure. And there are about 92 agents that we have registered that work cross-domain. So within a domain, I can have many agents, coding agents, this agent, that. But when UnitedHealth Group, payer, provider, pharmacy, etc., domains that can work cross-agent with responsible secure data sources, 92. And we have to register them so that we can monitor them in a post sort of scenario. Having said that, I now read about GLM 5.2 and I'm like, okay, this looks cool. And so maybe this whole thing is going to change all over again. So every weekend, we really walk into Mondays thinking, should we change the world again? We designed it to perfection. We were proud on Friday. And then we are back to paranoid and behind and irrelevant on Monday. Does that make sense? Do you feel that way?
Absolutely.
All
And
the time.
then because we've mentioned it so many times, I just pulled up, so GLM 5.2, to your point, kind of blew up Twitter or X recently on really from different benchmarks coming in, achieving kind of the last frontier model performance, not the new fable mythos coming out and then uncoming out as is happening, but that prior version, and specifically in coding, where the token costs have blown up. As you mentioned, there's lots of headlines around cost and public companies pulling back on usage and restricting usage. But then, GLM 5.2, an open source Chinese-based model that is far cheaper, and people can even run on kind of their own infrastructure. And so to your point, this has uprooted kind of a lot of the frontier conversations on spend. And a separate study was talking about how actually OpenRouter, a company that looks at kind of different ways for people to access what models, the majority of models now for US-based companies through OpenRouter is now, Chinese open source models. And so it is changing.
Do you see large? Do you What's the largest? And you don't have to name the enterprise. What's the largest enterprise that's using GLM 5.2 today, if you know of any?
Matt, I don't know if you have one. There are many, many people, if you look on, who are testing. I don't know
Right.
if there's a large institution, to your point, that
I don't think
has
there's anyone that's
said,
come out
hey, we've switched
to name it, but
everything we're running, but everyone should be testing it,
yes, I well,
right?
this Right. You should know your use cases, which it sounds like SendDeep, you guys are like really, if you're paranoid, you're doing something right, would be my response to that comment, by the way. But like on the GLM stuff, like I have not seen, to be fair, some like sobering aspects of this. So it is an amazing model. It is a 4.8. I think most people would agree in terms of quality, those who've tested it, mainly for engineering and other, more basic tasks. But I wouldn't say that we haven't seen the healthcare, benchmarks, it's not blowing those away to our knowledge yet. But the other thing's interesting, this is going back to something that Noam Brown started a thread on, who's the CTO of OpenAI, or one of the lead scientists at OpenAI, where he said, like, listen, we don't have benchmarks that can really show the upper bounds, because if you just give it more tokens, there doesn't seem to be an upper limit. So with that in mind, if you look at the GLM release, again, it gets to those frontier levels, but it's using 5 to 10x the number of tokens to achieve the same outcome as a 4.8, for example. So yes, they're cheaper, they're more cost efficient. I would almost argue that this would not be one you can run at your home. It's a 750 plus billion parameter model. Like, unless you've got a garage full of, Mac minis or something at home, I'm not sure how you're running this on your own prem. But in general, though, I think it's more the higher level discourse, which is around like how much do we empower the community to take the model, shape it, use it for what we want, and almost have ownership over it, versus riding the frontier with the expectation that the partner that I've chosen, or the model that I've chosen, or in your case, do we put a harness around it to make those decisions maybe more on the fly, more intelligently for a given use case? I don't have a great answer, but what I'm starting to come to the conclusion is our benchmarks aren't great publicly to really inform a lot of our decision making, and the work that sounds like you're doing, and I think I know Justin's doing, which, if I know my own use cases super well, I can almost tell within a couple days with a new release, hey, this is going to be better, I'm going to use this or not. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, there's almost that your AI literacy is high enough that you can make some of those decisions around your own business use cases.
Yeah. And Sandeep, I want to come back to you in a second and talk about the models. Also, very publicly, you've mentioned spending a lot of money this year. Candidly, I've used that, I think, $1.5 billion line, but please correct it, to scare some of our health system partners of, hey, you should think about investing more here. But before we do that, because we're talking about models, I feel like we'd be remiss if we didn't bring up this paper. I feel like that, has blown up at least the medical AI sphere on performance. And so this was a study done by a number of researchers that looked at kind of general purpose large language models compared to some of these specialized clinical AI tools. As Matt said, and there's been a lot of discussion on the benchmarks and what has performed better or not, the short version being these generalized models, again, a little bit out of date if you look this did Claude Opus 4.6, GPT 5.2, Gemini 3.1, but showed that they are actually performing better than open evidence and updates expert AI models. People were talking about the bitter lesson on trying to encode all this specific medical expertise. Matt worked so hard to learn as a sub-subspecialist. But if you give the models enough data and time and compute, that they start to do better. And so I guess we talked about model performance, we talked about model costs. Like, Cindy, you talked about how many models you're using. Like, how are you keeping your head around these different aspects and tools as you kind of start to develop what you're doing internally?
I mean, I think so this is fascinating. And I think I saw early versions of this, and then Eric Topol published it himself. And I normally take that a little more seriously. So then I saw Open Evidence kind of retort on it as well. So I love the theater around this. But zooming out of this specific example, when we were earlier thinking of a product roadmap of how should we think about claims and reimbursement? How should we think about the patient intake experience? How should we think about the patient clinical and care pathways? How should we think about, and remember, Optum Health touches 20 million patients a year. We employ 10,000 physicians. So when we are thinking about the tech landscape that improves the patient experience and the provider experience, the option we have with this engineering firepower and with this kind of AI resources is to build versus buy. And remember, for somebody who's grown up in AI, like it's really a matter of pride to build. And nowadays, build is like training an open weight model on a whole bunch of data and getting a model right is not rocket science anymore. You feel like you can do it. And I think we refrain from doing that. More often than not, in this realm, I feel that I need a harness that can change out the model. It could be a specialized LLM supplier today, and tomorrow a God model may completely replace that out of the box because it makes sense, right? It's just getting trained on all digital assets in the world. So at some point, the reasoning has got to get better and better. So I won't comment on the specific case because there are many of our vendors and partners in that graph you showed, and they're all good. They're all good partners, but I can see the trend. I can see the God models getting better. And I can see that responsible organizations, because we got to keep focus on affordability and then speed to market with end-to-end functionality, I'd rather focus on the experience and the workflow and embedding different models into the workflow. Clinical reasoning is one of the most critical pieces of that puzzle. Make sense?
Absolutely. And I think, it's been interesting to your point. And early on, the conversations, hey, we're going to take a bunch of medical data and just train a frontier model from scratch. I've told our team and our partners and customers, like, we are not doing that. Again, we could be wrong, but yes, it takes time and compute to do that in specialized data. But these models, to your point, are changing so fast by the week. It's not that you couldn't get to slightly better performance, and especially at your scale, you have the data where you really could. But what is the urgency and what is the priority to do so? Getting the context right, getting the details of the use cases, as well as the team alignment on we're going to rethink the work. There are higher priorities, I think, as we do this. Someday, fast forward down the line, once we've done all of the low-hanging fruit and now we're trying to eke out bits of, like, sure, let's run at that. But candidly, my own opinion is we're years away. And like many things, whereas we're
Agreed.
predicting the future, could be wrong. But it just seems like there's bigger fish to fry at the moment.
I mean, it's interesting to hear both of you talk about this because, like, what you're kind of saying, and I think this paper, the controversy that swirled around it also hints at it too, but we really are talking about a commoditization. I mean, like, let's just say what it is, right? And what we're talking about is the value that sits on top of that. Now, whether that value is your own business context, your specific use cases, the harness, or maybe you do RL and use some new fancy tools to improve for a big given. But like what we're talking about is above the model layer. And the other thing I think that's interesting about this discussion is papers like this keep happening. In other words, peer review papers come out, they test models that were 18 months old because that's how long the peer review process is. But we're trained in the clinical world to really pay attention to peer review work. And again, we're having these debates that are almost 18 months old, right, to me in the peer review literature around, okay, this model versus this model and that benchmark. But what we're talking about in the real world, the day-to-day, is the value that we're getting for the use case, irrespective of the model. And that I think that disconnect is really important to highlight. And I think it's causing a lot of controversy in the back and forth that you're seeing because the folks that have a vested interest, as you might, in a given model's, horse race, you're going to have a visceral reaction to that. But it's very telling that the folks that are actually translating the model into value are more focused on the actual value than the model. I think it's a fascinating insight that maybe is kind of a lot of us are missing that in the debates that we're having.
Yeah, and I think.
I mean, we work in an industry that still processes 9 billion faxes a year. Let's get perspective here before we get to whether it fell short of Opus 4.8 or not is one end of the question. We do process 9 billion faxes. I go to some of my team members who are still using like some parts of UnitedHealth who still use OCR, optical character recognition, for some use cases because it's been embedded in the workflow. It was a new invention 4 years back, and now it's embedded in the workflow and extricating it out to use multimodal LLMs. When I challenge that team, why are you still using OCR? And they're like, well, we're trying to replace the 9 billion faxes. and this is the cheapest, fast. Anyway, so this is a gradient in an industry that, you're just seeing the tip of the iceberg here versus what's really below.
So one of the th things that's always fascinating that we discuss, clearly we're all excited about these models, we're excited about the potential. One thing I struggle with certainly is timing. When, how fast, how do we prioritize this? I mean, Sandeep, how do you talk about timing with your team? And take it in any direction you can, right? Obviously, you're a public company, you have many different kind of people to communicate with on this, but it's just something I find is so hard given the pace that these things are moving. How frustrated should we be that something's not achieved yet? How much time should we give our team? Should we OCR the 9 billion facts or something else? But like, how do you think about timing with all of this?
Well, I mean, so actually, Matt and I worked together when I was at Mars in the PET radiology space, and at that time, at least the mantra I had tried to evangelize among colleagues was this idea that a large Mars is about $50-70 billion company, like big company. The idea that a large legacy company could move 100x faster. And the idea was 100x. That was the big sort of every poster had 100x on it. And so on, my office in Minnesota also has the big 100x logo. And the idea was not you worked 100x harder. The idea is in a large company by design, or in large fragmented industries by design, most people are not zero distance to the user, to the end user, to the patient, to the receptionist at the front at the provider clinic, to the physician, to the moment of truth. And so everyone's abstracting. And because everyone's abstracting, 90% of the people need consensus layers, more data, more reports to abstract. Unless you take the problem solvers, in this case, I'd say engineers, product managers, product managers now with Claude and Codex can be engineers. So get them to the patient interaction, get them to the call center and have them do side-by-side calls. That then injects a rare form of speed. And frankly, my experiments, and many failed and many are okay, have been around what happens in a large legacy fragmented industry or institution where you get the problem solvers zero distance to the problem. And then, start solving 100 times faster. And look, it's mixed results, right? We are particularly at this time when the problem solvers have so many superpowers. So even next week, I'm trying to set six tiger teams on six processes end to end where I'm not seeing fast enough results. I'm thinking, okay, get the tiger teams, but the tiger teams need to be top on Claude 4.8, they need to be top on Codex, they need to be top on, and so on. In my leadership meeting, strategy meeting last week, somebody came up with a competitor who has a beautiful experience. Like just the app experience was like breathtaking, and it depressed us. Like we were down, like we're like, okay, if these guys came up with this, like what the heck? And then somebody just threw a login password in. And you know the rest. You threw it to Claude Code saying, build a more beautiful experience, get inspired by that, but take our context. And in about 60 seconds, an HTML file appeared, which was even more breathtaking. So my point is, we can reconcile ourselves to say, oh, this industry will never change. There are lots of people like Justin and Matt who came over, but this industry will never change. Or this is a large organization, it won't move fast enough. I think UnitedHealth Group, particularly this regime of leadership, and I won't say this just for sort of positioning ourselves, every month, every CEO, not CIO, not CTO, every CEO of every business, including myself, we are in a room with our CTOs, with our CFOs. CFOs, very importantly, to your point on metrics, Justin, like what is the metric with our chief medical officers? In terms of outcomes. So the CIO, CTO, CFO, CMO, CEO are in one room for all the businesses that 50 people, literally 50 people together, 6 hours. I want some of my life back. Justin, these are draining meetings, But 6 hours a month, we just obsess over AI use cases, AI tokens, the value and the outcome from AI, the NPS results before and after for AI, and so on. And so I thought I was doing great with AI for the last 3 years. But now this regime with this leadership, now with this kind of cadence, and why are we doing that? I think it injects just rare, it injects paranoia through the organization. Now I have to prepare for the next one. So I better show results in 30 days. Otherwise, my peers, you see the tension in the organization and the financial tension as well. So there's investment, there's a return. We have to solve for affordability. When I'm advising my clients, I actually am just trying to tell them, hey, just replicate this, guys. And I wish you could do it every week. I mean, this is so effective. That makes sense?
We don't do it with all of our health system partners, but we do this with a handful of them where we're running, in some cases, every other week with the CFO on progress on tracking with that CEOs and the leadership team. And I love that, at that scale, it's the whole team, because I think at a lot of places, AI is a delegated issue.
Right,
It is delegated
exactly.
to. It's an IT problem. It's an innovation problem. Hire someone like Matt. It's the AI guy's problem. Like, he'll go figure this out. And it really is a CEO level issue and leadership discussion if you want the pace. And granted, it's interesting when, obviously we're here having this discussion. The fact that you want to join us on an AI and healthcare podcast is telling in and of itself. The early adoption historically of technology, at least in the health system side, they haven't been the winners, right? Historically, it hasn't been the right strategy to super adopt early and pave the way. And so that's the historical context for our field. And I think we all believe AI is different. We all believe these tools are already changing, forget model improvements. But it is, useful, I think, to recognize like the historical context for where we come in healthcare for why, what you're mentioning is so out there, is not the norm for kind of most leadership teams and what they're doing, but it is starting to happen. And so my
Well,
own opinion is you'll get different groups like yours who have leaned in and are making this transformation, and many groups who won't. And if you believe the outcomes are going to be an order of magnitude with these technologies as they're coming, they're going to be the organizations that persist and the ones that don't.
I want to say in 2 years, the health systems you advise, Justin, in 2 years, either AI will be a project or AI will be the business. It's the sense I get, at least from my clients.
Right. Yeah, I think that, and that's what makes this different to me. And I think you guys are dancing around this a little bit, but the platform shift conversation, like, did you want to be the first one to go to cloud, like all up? I don't know. Like, I don't know if those folks were happy with the decisions, right? There's so many things they had to learn, but because this is a shifting landscape, and I think you're in a position now where, you're actually going from a, sounds like a top down, but also a bottoms up. Which is where this technology kind of touches every aspect of your organization. This isn't as much of a static platform shift to me as it is a way of working change. Like, it's not just another quote unquote tool that I'm getting licensed to and using. It's going to then transform the work itself. And I think that, again, we hear this a lot, but to see organizations like yours, the ones that Justin's worked with, I've seen several that are, the light bulb turns on. There's a lot of iteration though, and there's a lot of, I would say, some persistence necessary. But once that light bulb's on, it's magical, right? And it's almost, you just back away and let the folks that are sitting, to your point, really close to the user, really close to the translation, take the ball, and then, like you said, create something on the fly that immediately addresses the user's need or use case right there. Now, you may have to productize it and do some more, but the point is that light bulb turns on at that moment where you're at the peak engagement between the use case and the person that's now has this power at their fingertips that is not just another tool, it's something more than that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and for us, I mean, and look, both of you, I know you personally. You're very mission-driven. You're doing this more than for a livelihood. You're doing this for making a dent in healthcare. And for us as well, it's like, okay, it's bottoms up, it's top down, but it's inside out. So everything we learn inside becomes a product outside. And because we are an important, relatively important part of the system, we feel almost a responsibility saying, hey, if we can solve this for this part of UnitedHealth Group's workflow, well, what if we extend this capability across the board? And that's why, products like Optum Real and Crimson and Digital Prior Auth, et cetera, as we try and solve for these problems, I think, the more partners we can get in this journey, I think we make a serious dent in healthcare. So that's the dream.
It really does feel like the moment when it can change. And thank you so much for joining us. And I think the purpose of this was, how can we kind of bring people to this mission, to your point, when it feels like the forces are aligning and the people and the technology and the tools to really make things better. And so, Sandeep, thank you so much for joining us. And we will discuss many more hours on all this in the
Well, I
future.
was going to say so much from you, Sandeep, but I will say the only thing I'm not going to take away from this is telling my daughters that I should be buying them gifts for Father's Day. I'm just letting you know of all the pearls you've shared with us.
No, this is fun. We could have danced all night. So this is so good. Thank you for what both of you do. And always fun to hang with you. So I appreciate it.
Thank you.